You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. To know our guest, you would say that his recent appointment by the Philadelphia Phillies as Major League Player Information Coordinator was inevitable. By age five, he was carrying around the complete handbook of baseball, a paperback with the statistics of every player in the major leagues. He graduated from Stanford with a degree in economics, where he also pursued a master's degree in statistics. After being drafted by the Cubs, he interned after his first pro season at Class A Peoria with Stats Inc., a sports content and statistical analysis provider. And that was all before he carved out a 9-year career running around the outfield with the Cubs, Rays, Athletics, and Twins. We welcome Ted Randall's Talking Baseball, the legend of Sam Fold. It's great to have you on the, I've never introduced any, and I've been doing this a couple of days. I've never introduced anybody like that. You always, though, wanted to keep your options open after your baseball career ended, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think most of my career, I sort of operated under the impression that my career would be over, like, tomorrow. There was never a ton of certainty, and certainly going back to, you know, when I was a kid and going into high school and in college, like, I knew that the odds of actually making a living out of playing baseball were pretty slim. So, yeah, I just kind of always prepared for post-playing, whether that post-playing meant after college, after a couple of years in the minor leagues, or, you know, luckily ended up being a few years in the big leagues. So certainly I think you hear it a lot as a player that you're going to be a former player far longer than you're going to be a current player. But I guess I had a pretty good appreciation of that, given how unlikely it was that I would actually make a living out of the game for a bit.
You hadn't played in the majors since 2015 due to a rotator cuff injury for which you underwent surgery in 2016, but you did come back to play for Team Israel in last year's World Baseball Classic, which went on to have a very surprising and competitive run.
Yes, that was, you know, obviously in hindsight, that will be the last time I ever put a uniform on, and I'm really proud that that's the last playing experience that I ever got. I mean, it was I really had no business being out on the field. I could barely throw the ball 90 feet, but luckily we had middle infielders that were really good at busting their tails out to the outfield and cutting my grenade shots off and making it as competitive as possible. But, you know, it was once I got clearance from my surgeon to go ahead and play, you know, the results weren't necessarily going to be pretty, but at least I wasn't sacrificing my long-term health. So, you know, I let everybody know, like, I'm not going to be I'm not going to look like Vladimir Guerrero out there, but if as long as we get that message, I'd be more than happy to represent Israel. And the way that we played out there and the way that we came together as a team and just the whole cultural experience was, honestly, I don't know if I can drop a better scenario to go out.
You had, though, some interest from clubs prior to last season. Which of those teams were interested in you?
Well, there were some teams. You know, I think there. You know, I was in conversation with teams going into last year. You know, the winter, basically a year ago, was in conversations with some teams, but I let them know, and with full disclosure, that I wasn't sure just how my shoulder was going to respond to the surgery. Mm. And ultimately, I just never got there. So when I played for Team Israel, my arm was nowhere near where it needed to be. And to this day, it's, you know, eight months later, it's still not where it needs to be. If I were healthy enough, I would be playing right now, or like hopefully geared up to play the 2018 season. But unfortunately, my shoulder didn't cooperate, so those talks never really progressed. Given that I was honest with them and said, "Hey, I'm not. I might be able to hide in six games of the WBC, but over the course of 140 or 162 games, I will not survive with the kind of arm that I have right now."
So after the World Baseball Classic ended, Sam, what did you do with the rest of the year?
Well, I continued rehabbing. I still had every ambition of playing, and I was hoping that I would play, you know, whenever my arm got back into at least somewhat normal condition. I wanted to play at the tail by the tail end of the 2017 season, so I rehabbed up through June, really, and then I just kind of, after a solid month of nightly deliberation internally and between my wife and myself and everybody else who I leaned on for advice, that was for a month straight. That was, do I keep going? Do I keep going? Is it worth it? When June rolled around and I still was nowhere near being ready and I was looking at missing two consecutive seasons, I decided to hang him up. And then I really just embraced like being a normal person for in the summer for the first time ever.
Right.
Getting to do things like, you know, celebrate the July 4th, go out on a boat on a Tuesday evening, not have to work over the weekend, you know, like watch whatever the heck I wanted on TV over the weekend during the day. Things that just I've never done. Spend time with my family for consistently for weeks. Those are the things that I've really made a point of doing, knowing that if I were to get back in the game, which I now am, I wouldn't necessarily get those opportunities down the pike.
How did they react to you being around all the time?
I think the overwhelming thought was a positive. Yeah. They were, I know I loved it.
Of course.
For darn sure.
Yeah.
My kids, I think, enjoyed having dad around a little bit.
Of course
as well.
They did.
And I know my wife, I think my wife did by and large. I'm sure she got sick of my corny jokes.
Yeah, but you're sure about the kids?
I think so.
Yeah.
They had a smile on their face every time they were with dad. I'm a nice dad. I saved the discipline for my wife.
Yes. How did this happen with the Phillies, your appointment as a Major League Player Information Coordinator?
Well, they were one of the teams that I was talking to last winter with the potential of playing. So I had really no prior relationship with anybody really in the Phillies organization. And they sort of in passing said, oh, by the way, whenever you're done playing, we'd love to have a conversation about, you know, working here. So I obviously didn't envision that conversation happening, you know, 4 or 5 months later, but that's what happened. Mm-hmm. I called them up and said, hey, I'm done. let's have a conversation. So I, you know, spoke with Matt Klintak a few times throughout the summer and came up here and visited a little bit and got to look under the hood a little bit and see what they do and get a feel for the organization and some of the changes that are taking place here. And ultimately felt really, really good about coming up here, both professionally and personally. And with my Northeast roots, it felt really cool to come back up here and be a part of that culture again.
Sure, being a guy from New Hampshire. My understanding is, the job description is, Sam, that you will work closely with the Phillies players, the coaches, the front office staff, and the research and development department, and you'll make recommendations to the coaching staff, the players, and the front office. Is that pretty much it in a nutshell?
Yeah, it's a fairly large nutshell, but yeah, it's
it is.
I'm sort of learning as I go here. I mean, I'm 2 months into the position, and a lot of what I've done is maybe a little bit outside of that description. But by and large, come season, I will be in that sort of bridge between our analytics group and our players and coaches, and obviously working in conjunction with everybody else in our baseball operations department and in other departments too. It's one of the things that excited me about this organization is the communication between departments and getting an opportunity to work with a lot of people and getting feedback and input from people in every department of this game is really cool. I think good building block to a successful team. So, yeah, I envision I'll be down in the clubhouse a lot. I'll probably even throw the uniform on a little bit for some pregame stuff and try to help out however I can there. But we'll also be spending a good chunk of time upstairs with khakis on and talking to our analytics group and just merging the information that they are so good at developing and communicating that down to our players and coaches.
This is also a great time, Sam, to join the Phillies organization, which truthfully is something people couldn't say for a while.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly attractive. I think we're really well positioned to do a lot of damage in years to come, and really probably in a real short term. I think you see it by some of the aggression in which we've made moves this winter. There's no doubt about we want to be really competitive next year and win as many games as we can next year. So, yeah, we're at the right part of our rebuilding campaign, and I think I'm really pumped to see what we can do in the NL East and in the playoffs in years to come.
And you work out with the Phillies' new manager, Gabe Kapler, who also happened to play for the Rays, and he's also deeply rooted, like you are, in analytics.
Yeah, so Gabe and I go back a little bit. We never crossed paths in Tampa, but have gotten to know him over the years through various avenues. And, you know, I think the job was really attractive to me throughout the summer, regardless of who their next manager ended up being. But once they hired Gabe, I think that position became even more attractive. And he's an incredible person to work with. He's just one of those guys who makes you better as a person and professionally.
And your hiring is yet another signal that the Phillies are moving quickly toward the front of baseball's new age of information.
Yeah, so I think most, if not all, organizations have an incredible wealth of information and knowledge, and now the key is making sure that it's communicated and implemented in the right way. So I think the way you do that is, one way to do it is to get somebody who understands that side of the game, but also understands what it's like to put your spikes on and have to hit a 2-0 slider in the bottom of the ninth inning with the game on the line. So I think having those backgrounds and the familiarity with both sides is really helpful. And I would not be surprised if some other teams, I think we're already seeing some teams follow suit, but I would imagine this position will gain popularity in years to come.
I think it's gaining popularity and success. Look at the teams in the last two World Series, Sam, the Cubs and the Indians, the Astros, the Dodgers. They're among the most progressive organizations with regard to the use of analytics.
Absolutely, yeah. It's certainly that's a good place to start. It's an easy. It makes my job a lot easier if I have any. If there's any dispute over the value of analytics, I think that's an easy argument to be made. And I don't think it's a coincidence. You look at what Cleveland's done, and with the payroll, the mid market that they're in, it's pretty cool. It's pretty easy to sort of link the use of analytics and their creativity with their on-field success.
Sam Fuld is with us. He's Philadelphia's new Major League Player Information Coordinator, been in the job for a couple of months. Let's talk about the family, and let's talk about your career. Your father has been the dean of the College of Liberal Arts and a psychology professor at the University of New Hampshire, and your mother has been a state senator. These have been two powerful role models for you.
They have, although, you know, I don't look at them as dean and senator. You know, I just look at them as mom and dad, and I think, you know, they are, I almost chuckle on the inside when I hear them described as powerful. They're powerful, but they're just my mom and my dad, and they certainly, like, taught me so much, whether it be humility, work ethic, but I don't think, you know, I'd be hesitant to, you know, place too much emphasis on their job titles, because for me, there's so much more. Mm-hmm. And I think I certainly wouldn't be where I am, where I was as a player, where I am now, without them.
But they're so much more, and yet they called you Sumo Sam as a kid. Why did they do that?
I think I was the fat baby.
You were a fat guy. You were what, 10 pounds at birth?
I was like over 10 pounds at birth, yeah.
Wow.
I didn't go too far. I was put on about 160 more as a player, and that's about it.
And that's about it. But you were a squatty body, right?
Yeah, I was a chunky kid, and one of those kids who actually stayed big throughout my childhood, and then I had a rude awakening when, like, all my friends shot up past me, and suddenly, like, my power forward skills on the basketball court did not necessarily apply.
You were drafted by the Cubs in the 10th round in 2004, and you applied for an internship at Stats, Inc., which is a sports content and statistical analysis provider, following your professional debut at Class A Peoria in the Midwest League in 2005. What made you do that?
Well, I think you mentioned it earlier. I mean, I was always a kid who loved stats, baseball stats. stats. So it was always an interest of mine. And then, you know, that year when I was playing in Peoria, I read Moneyball. And, you know, I think it was really the first time I had some support of my, like, of my statistical thinking. I knew who Bill James was. I sort of knew that this was a growing part of baseball. But when I read Moneyball, it just really opened my eyes and gave me that sort of, I don't know, emotional support. Like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one who thinks like this. It was just good to be a part of that, like, feel like a part of a community all of a sudden. So, you know, Stats, Inc. at the time was mentioned a lot in the book. Did a little research on them and found out that they were a Chicago-based company. So being in Peoria and being single with no obligations and staring at a 4.5-5-month off-season, just like you alluded to earlier, and wanting to prepare for life after playing, I just thought, what the heck? Like, what else? You know, this would be a great opportunity. So applied for this position, and you know, it was generally the people working at the company at the time were generally, you know, non-athletes, to put it not kindly. But there were some other – there were a couple player guys who had played at a pretty high level. So it was a good blend and an unbelievable experience. It was maybe just a month and a half, and it was probably to 99% of people – like the most tedious work you could dream up.
Really?
But for me, it was really interesting. It's just, I got to watch major league games on video. And back then, this is 2005. I mean, I was watching major league video and I was like freeze framing each pitch and then plotting the location of the pitch based on where it was when my eyes told me, you know, where the ball would be crossing home plate roughly. And I was just, it was a total, I mean, it's laughable now, 12 years, 13 years later, that's how we plotted location. But that's what we did. We plotted the location, the velocity, and the pitch type. Again, subjective. It was, you know, was right most of the time, but really I was just trusting my eyes. Was this a slider? Was this a cutter? I don't know, but I'll guess. And that's what I did for, you know, to go over one game, probably took 3 hours. And I did that kind of all day throughout the day. I did other stuff too, but by and large, that was my, those are my roles.
But you loved it, and I'm thinking perhaps it enhanced your future post-playing career ambitions.
It did, and it really it enhanced it. It confirmed that this was a passion of mine, however crazy and boring it may seem to most people. But being in that environment, just getting like the side conversations, you know, just the. Being around other people who share that interest with you, and just sort of coming up with new ideas, but knowing that the tedium of like going pitch by pitch by pitch by pitch for hours, that was actually fun. I think was another piece of support that this is something I'd want to do whenever the time came.
And the time has come. You were traded to Tampa Bay before the 2011 season in the Matt Garza deal that also sent a throw-in named Chris Archer. Were you surprised at the trade? What was your reaction?
A little bit surprised, yeah. I don't think anybody's not surprised when they get that phone call, but you know, I'd never been traded before. I knew I was out of options, so I knew it was sort of a possibility, but however naive a thought that may have been, I thought, well, the winter meeting's passed, and it looks like, you know, I'm in the clear now. And by January, I was totally geared up for spring training and just wanted to make the Cubs team out of camp. But I got the phone call. I remember driving to the airport to pick up my parents. I was living in Florida at the time. And on the way to the airport, got a call from Jim Hendry. And told me I was no longer a Cub, so it was kind of an interesting welcome from my parents. Oh, by the way, I'm on the Rays now.
Throw out all the Cub stuff at home, okay? Yeah, we got to get new
Why
stuff.
Why don't we stop at the mall on the way back to the house?
Yeah, let's get some Rays gear. Get some Rays gear. You make the team, you make the Rays as a backup, but suddenly got an opportunity to play every day in 2011 when Manny Ramirez fails a drug test and retires rather than be suspended. And the day after that, you make an all-time great catch on Juan Pierre, who now is with the Chicago White Sox with the bases loaded, and they're down by a run. And this is stupendous, and it lives forever now on YouTube. And this was just one of a series of great catches in Rays history, and thus was born the legend of Sam Fold.
I guess so. However short-lived that legend lasted, or was. Well, that was a really – that was probably the craziest, say, month of my career, maybe my life. I, like you described, I went in, broke camp. Making was beyond ecstatic to break camp for the, with a major league team for the first time in my career, and was probably looking at, you know, playing once or twice a week and sort of spelling Johnny Damon in left and occasionally getting a start in center and maybe in right, just depending on the matchups, and was just really happy to be a fourth or fifth outfielder on a major league team in April. And then I got the news that we all got the news that Manny would no longer be with us. And, you know, it just so happened that Johnny wasn't physically feeling great or good enough to be an everyday left fielder on artificial turf in Tampa. And yeah, I was sort of thrust into that role, and it was, you know, the daily adrenaline was incredible.
I can't even imagine. And you're leading the American League in hitting, and you're leading the American League in stolen bases.
That's not a sign. Yeah, I mean, if that's not a sign that I had some serious adrenaline going, I mean, I think, yeah, I laughed at that. Actually, you could actually put that sentence together and not be lying. I mean, it was incredible. It was just so much happened so quickly, and you know, a lot of it was just great timing. I mean, we all know that as an outfielder, like the plays you made are in large part skilled, but a lot of it is just luck. Like these guys happened to hit balls that were just within reach of my range, right? So if they had hit a ball 10 feet the other direction, it's either a double or it's a routine catch. But it just so happened that for seems like a few weeks, I was getting these opportunities to make really good plays, and luckily I took advantage of them.
And are making some of the best catches in franchise history. And early on, you adopt the phrase, it's just Sam Fold doing Sam Fold things.
I don't know if I don't know who said that. I was just, yeah, I don't know. I tried to keep it simple and really, like, block out a lot of that noise that was, like, deafening at the time. I mean, it was, I went from an anonymous sort of part-time player in Chicago, and then to have all this attention was really overwhelming at times, but I tried to simplify it and just stay in the moment. And all those cliche riddled thoughts, I mean, it was really important at the time, and it certainly wore me down. Just that month was awesome, but also really, really tiring. And in those moments, I think you just do better when you stick to a routine and you keep it simple and block out all that external stuff.
Sam Fold is with us, and then 2 days after the incredible catch, this New Hampshire kid grew up in New England, who grew up a Red Sox fan, plays his first game at Fenway Park with family and friends in attendance. You sneak a home run around the pesky pole in right field, and you follow it up with a triple and two doubles, and all you need now is a single to complete the cycle. The easiest part of this, and you line a fastball into the left field corner in Fenway Park, and you did a Sam Fold thing. You stretched it into a double. There goes the cycle. Wow. And until that night, no one had ever had four extra base hits in his first game at Fenway Park, and it opened in 1912.
Yeah, and it was the park that I grew up going to. It was an incredible night. I was out there at a night game, and I was out there at about noon with my wife, and I just remember I wanted to walk on the field with her and have her be a part of that moment. Even though it was 7 hours prior to game time, I wanted her to experience that with me. And yeah, I mean, there were tears rolling down my cheek, like just getting out on the field and thinking back to all those games that I went to as a kid. So I would recommend any player, if they ever want to have a great game, just try to channel their inner child and let the emotions spill out at 7 hours prior to game time.
And you were once, I read, a bat boy at Fenway Park at a University of New Hampshire game played against BU, against Boston University.
Yeah. So my dad, in addition to teaching at the time at UNH, was a sort of volunteer assistant coach. And we played, I guess, Boston University, when they had a program, baseball program, they would maybe annually hold a game at Fenway. And I was a bat boy at age 9 and 10 for the University of New Hampshire, and got an opportunity to be on the field, you know, for a game at Fenway.
There's also a great story. There's another Fenway story that you got to talk about sneaking into a party at the 1999 All-Star Game played at to Fenway Park that involved you and your new best friend Jeff Bagwell.
Well, yeah, I few of my friends and I decided. Well, we were lucky enough to get tickets to this Home Run Derby. And being idiot 16, 17-year-olds, we weren't satisfied with watching, like, Mark McGwire hit 80 homers over under Lansdowne.
Under the highway.
With a broken bat. As if that wasn't cool enough, the next day, I believe it was, might be getting the timing off, but anyway, we went to their fan fest, which was held, like, behind the stadium, and somehow we're able to sneak by like three different levels of security, and we ended up in this like VIP tent. But in order to get into this VIP tent, we literally had to like barrel roll underneath the tent. And so here I am rolling through the tent, like giddy that I had snuck through like the final layer of security, and I look up and like Jeff Bagwell's just staring me in the face. He's at this table with his family, and he's probably like, "What is this kid doing?" I mean, this is 19 years ago. I mean,
yeah, 1999.
I'm pretty sure we would have spent the night in jail. But we were idiot teenagers, and we ended up, spending the whole night with Bagwell and Pudge Rodriguez and Nomar and these Sports Center celebrities, it was a pretty fun night, a pretty dumb night, pretty fun.
Sam Fold is with us now with the Philadelphia Phillies as a Major League Player Information Coordinator, having retired at the age of 35. But during that time, Sam, you endeared yourself with the clubs you played for by playing the game the right way, laying down the perfect bunt before the perfect bunt was apparently outlawed. You ran hard out of the batter's box. You always took the extra base. You threw to the right base from the outfield. And your all-or-nothing style of play made you a fan favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that might be just because I kind of look like the average American. sure, not. I mean, you know, 5'9", 5'10" is being maybe generous. And I just, you know, knowing that, I talked about the work ethic my parents instilled, and I think that started on the baseball field. And I knew, you know, I'm kind of a giant compared to my parents, so I knew that, like, my genes weren't lined up for me to be more than any, like, 5'9", 5'10". So I knew that I would have to sort of do these little things and hustle and, you know, lay out in the outfield and bust my tail down first baseline every at bat.
But you knew no other way.
I knew no other way, and I knew that if I was going to reach my goal of being the best baseball player that I could be, that was the way I was going to do it. I knew that in high school, I was not going to be necessarily going to be recognized from scouts' perspective by how I looked in the uniform. So I knew one way I could open some minds was to hustle, play hard, and do little things, and that was ingrained in my sort of baseball thinking for a long time. And luckily, that it was never because it was so deeply ingrained, it never changed.
Do you think you're going to go up to players who don't play the game the way in which you did, and you're going to tell them there's a way to play the game?
I don't think I can be that direct. I would love for that to become a part of everyone's thinking and the way they approach the game. But I recognize that everybody comes from different backgrounds. And it's not as simple as just telling a guy you need to play the game the right way. I think it's gaining their trust and hopefully allowing them to want to ask me about what I did as a player And if it comes from a player, if the interest comes from a player, then I'll tell them, yeah, look, I played really hard because I had to, and I made a difference because I played really hard, and hopefully educate them on the benefits of playing hard and doing little things. Hopefully that the interest comes from them, and then it becomes a lot more easy to digest and to really buy into. I think no, as a player, you never want a coach just telling you to do something just because that's the way you did it. I think they want to know why. And I'd love for that to be part of our conversations, you know, them asking me what sorts of things matter to me as a player. And if that's the case, I'd happily give them that message.
You never played more than 120 games in a season, only once top 400 plate appearances. But maybe, Sam, that has something to do with what I think is the animus in the industry against players who are maybe 5 feet nine. The industry wants big players, big pitchers, big players. You were not that. And I think there's an animus against players who are not that physically gifted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that's existed for a long time, but maybe increasingly so. Thank God for our reigning AL MVP.
Thank God.
I think it's nice to see guys like him, and for me, Dustin Pedroia was another example of that. You know, if he can do the things that he does at his size, like anybody can. And I think as long as guys like that exist, and I know that they always will, there'll be that stigma attached to being small. But I also think we're better equipped to. We've always just linked size with strength, right? But it doesn't. They're not necessarily linked. They're not direct correlation. So. You might be able to look at a Jose Altuve when he's 16 and go, yeah, he's 5'4", but he's actually got a lot of power, and we can measure those things a lot better than we could 10, 20 years ago. So it's not about the size. It's about what we link with that size. It's the strength. It's the speed. It's those sorts of things. And we're just better at measuring that now.
In our remaining moments with Sam Fold, we need to talk about this. You have achieved this success despite type 1 diabetes, which you have had since the age of 10. How, Sam, was this discovered?
10-year-old kid, and spent a summer doing things that any other 10-year-old kid does, playing a lot of baseball, being active, and for about a month or so, I was just showing what now are, in retrospect, clear symptoms of type 1 diabetes. I was thirsty all the time. I was going to the bathroom all the time. I lost weight. I would just have these moments where I felt horrible. And without any type 1 diabetes in my family, neither me nor my parents had any idea what this was, but at least they knew it was something. So, after a little while, they took me into doctor, and I was quickly diagnosed, and it was a turning point in my life that changed my life. I really grew up in that moment and recognized that I had a whole new set of responsibilities for me as a 10-year-old kid.
In preparing for this interview, I read that only one time did you ever have a rough time, and that was during a tryout in your junior year of high school.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, I guess, One, it was a goal of mine from the day I was diagnosed to not let this disease get in the way of my goals as an athlete or in any other way, but particularly as a baseball player and as an athlete. So there was one instance that going to a tryout in my junior year, like I think it was in a Cleveland Indians tryout at one of the local high schools, and I was on some sort of like poison ivy medication that some of these steroidal medications really mess with my blood sugar, and I don't think I was aware of it at the time, but anyway, my blood sugar was way out of whack for that tryout, and I learned the hard way, so I wasn't drafted by the Cleveland Indians that year.
Did you ever feel anything unusual during a major league game because of the diabetes?
Well, no, I mean, there were moments where my blood sugar dropped below, when your blood sugar drops below a certain level, or if it gets above a certain level, definitely feel the effects of it. Usually more so on the low side. So yeah, there were moments, but there were really few and far between. I really focused on regulating my blood sugar at a high level. Sorry, not at a high level, but at an accurate level.
Right.
Keeping that in that window to optimize, you know, your physical abilities. So, yes, there were moments, and that's just the nature of being type 1 diabetic. It's an incredible challenge, and I think it's an underappreciated challenge. That's part of what I do with my charity stuff is just try to spread awareness. And
I know.
Educate
I'm going to talk about that. And, yeah. And the other names that who have played with it, famous people, Hall of Famers, Ron Santo, Catfish Hunter. Attention was brought to Brandon Morrow during the World Series. Dustin McGowan, the former Philly Dave Hollins, and former pitcher Bill Gullickson, principally with Montreal, but he was with Detroit, and he became an inspiration for you about a year and a half after you were diagnosed as a kid.
That's right. I was fortunate enough to have a family friend who was at the time the Boston Red Sox pitching coach. And so I was sort of a spoiled 12-year-old. I get to go down to Fenway quite a bit. And he set up this, knowing that the Tigers at the time had Bill Gullickson on their team, he set up this this meeting with him. So I met with Bill, I mean, for 2 minutes. It was during their batting practice, and it was over on the left field line. And he gave me a Tigers hat, which I wore for like the next 98 days straight. And we just chatted real briefly, and you know, I knew of him, but to be face to face and to actually speak to him and hear from him about how he manages his disease was so powerful. And the funny part is that it came full circle, and in years later, when I got to the big leagues, I ended up meeting him. When he was down in South Florida, I was playing against the Marlins, and he's since become a big part of my life in the charity world.
Sam Fold with us. Most wear the insulin pump, but that doesn't work for an outfielder who thinks nothing of diving for balls or running into the wall.
It doesn't. I mean, I think their adhesive capabilities are really good, but I don't know. I don't trust them.
Yeah. You don't want to be the crash test dummy.
No. But, you know, it's a wonderful tool, and I really probably will head down that road sooner rather than later now that I can call myself a former outfielder. Mm-hmm. It's a convenience tool, and it's not necessarily – it doesn't help in the day-to-day mental part of it. It doesn't help in the management of it necessarily, but it's certainly a nice feature, and it helps on the convenience side of things.
You just alluded to it, and I want to get this in. You jumped at the chance to hold sports camps for children with type 1 diabetes, raising awareness the past few years with your Slam Diabetes Wiffle Ball Tournament. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I partnered with a nonprofit based in Vermont. The founder, Jeff Kolak, has two type 1 diabetic children of his own, and a few years ago started this nonprofit called Slam T1D, or Slam Diabetes. And he, by and large, he does several things for the nonprofit, but the biggest is holding these wiffle ball tournaments as awareness raisers, as fundraisers, and he's held them throughout New England. 4 years ago, we partnered, and as a way to fund my own camp, which I'm now going on year 7, this upcoming February will be my 7th camp, we've done this wiffle ball tournament as a fundraiser for my type 1 diabetes sports camp, held also in Tampa. They're both events take place at the University of South Florida, and it is a ton of fun. I try to get as many, you know, big league guys. This year was the year of the manager. We had Joe Maddon and Gabe Kapler and Kevin Cash all out there, none of whom picked up a bat, unfortunately, but we had another great showing this year and raised a ton of money, and I think 20 teams involved. So it's a ton of fun, and it's an opportunity for kids who have type 1 diabetes to come out and just sort of forget that they're type 1 diabetic and feel normal, and certainly same goes for my camp. That is a wonderful opportunity for these kids to just feel a part of a community and learn from each other, and at least for a weekend, Just feel really comfortable in their own skin.
You have appeared in the New Yorker, not generally known for baseball coverage. You've written baseball book reviews for the Wall Street Journal. You played 9 years in the big leagues. You managed type 1 diabetes. You are now, for the past 2 months now, the Major League Player Information Coordinator for the Philadelphia Phillies. Sam, you were the poster child for overachieving.
Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot, and it's you know, whether you're sort of a kid who grows up with the odds against you, or the odds are in favor of you. I think there's plenty of opportunity for everyone to overachieve, and you know, there are examples of like that of people like that who are the Michael Jordans and the Tom Brady's, who have these wonderful physical gifts, and they also but they still overachieve, and that's why they're the greatest to ever play. But, you know, I think sometimes we slap that label on people who don't necessarily have these great physical abilities. But I think anybody is capable of overachieving, and to have that as one of the first adjectives attached to my name means a lot to me.
Well, it certainly meant a lot to your former manager in Tampa Bay, Joe Maddon, who said, quote, "Superman wears Sam Fold pajamas to bed," unquote.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that's the case anymore, but maybe for that quick time, that may have been the case.
Sam, the best of luck in your new position. Thank you so much for your time. All best wishes to you. So that'll do it for Sam Fold and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.